Welcome to All Things in the Name of Love. If you like this show, please like, subscribe, and share. Thanks. Welcome to another episode of All Things in the Name of Love. And today I have with me beautiful soul sister, Carolina Sotomayor, who I just met, but I felt her energy. I was like, yes. So thank you so much for joining me. And I'm being called to ask the first question, which is, tell me a little bit about your journey.
Okay. I would say I've always been a spiritual person. I've been able to see things or entities since I was little. My spiritual awakening started in 2014 when my dad passed away. It was my first big death or big loss. I had seen people pass away, but I wasn't particularly attached to them or I was like, okay, that person, but I wasn't like super attached to them. So with my dad passing, I started to ask, what is death? Death is very bizarre. How can I continue my relationship with him? Why does it have to end? Because I had a very abusive childhood. And, I had a very abusive childhood, and my dad was the only person that had not physically harmed me. I identified him as my safety in the world. And as a woman, father figures for related to safety and our emotional safety is very important. Mm-hmm. So when my dad died, I felt like everything just fell apart. And I was in this dark depression for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. I also got married about 8 months after he passed. And we wanted to have a baby, but wasn't able to conceive very easily. So much had happened in those like 2 years after he passed. 1 year, 3 days after my dad passed, his father passed. So my abuelo, my grandfather died three days after my dad did.
Ooh.
And then 1 year, the same week, my soul horse, I had an Appaloosa. And she was everything to me. She passed away.
Oh, wow.
So we had three deaths in a year. So April tends to be a very heavy month in our house. Mm-hmm. And then we weren't able to conceive very easily. And we weren't very open about that with many people. There was nothing medically wrong with me. The specialist recommended I go to grief therapy. She says, you're just really sad. And she was the first person to say grief can be physical. And I said, mm-hmm. So what? So I didn't know much about the mind-body connection, let alone that grief could, how could grief affect a person? I was 30 when he passed. Okay. And even all the people around me, all of their parents were still living. No one had lived through what I was doing. I had to write the check for my dad's cremation. I had to handle all of his belongings and determine what was in the dumpster and what was to be kept. I'm the one who had to making decisions even before he died for his hospice care. I was adulting very much at 30 when you still feel like, I was like, I feel like I'm an adult teenage kid at 30, you know? Mm-hmm. But no, even my in-laws, they had not handled, their parents were still living. So nobody had handled a death before.
Wow.
So nobody had around me, no friends of mine, all of their parents were alive. So I was going through something that nobody could relate to. And I sought out spirituality, and I was suggested to go see a psychic medium right before I got married. I was like, I don't know if I can get married because my dad's not going to be there. And I always envisioned him walking me down the aisle. So I went and saw the psychic medium about a month before, and she knew things that no one knew, like things that happened during my dad's hospice stay, conversations he and I had. And I was like, oh, what I thought and what I was seeking is very much real. Fast forward, infertility issues, nothing's wrong, grief therapy. Beginning of 2016, I have a horse accident. I fall in a ditch. I get a nasty concussion. I'm put on medical leave, mm-hmm. and still trying to get pregnant, not happening. My husband drives me to the psychic shop, and She's like, you need to get Reiki. You don't need another crystal for concussions. I was like, do you have a crystal for concussions? I'm really kind of in a hurry to heal this concussion, because if I don't get back on my horse soon, I'm never going to get back on my horse because I'm afraid if I wait too long. I was like a hurricane on wheels. So if I waited too long, I wouldn't be able to ride. I knew I wasn't going to get back on the horse because I was scared that I would fall again if I didn't do this quickly. I also knew if I became pregnant, I was probably never going to get back on the horse. Because I was not going to ride once I was pregnant.
Interesting.
Long story short, she suggested I get Reiki. That same week, I had a grief therapy appointment. She gave me an ultimatum. She goes, you either need to get on pharmaceuticals because you're at a cross point. I was like, you have to do something different because you are just treading water. And I had done the work. I was seeing her once or twice a week. For at this point, this is 2016. He died in April of 2014. So at least a year and a half of therapy at this point. And she said, why don't you get Reiki instead? It's get the trauma out of your tissues. Yeah. Like you have to move. Like your heart is still kind of stuck in your mind. We've done so much work. I had done EDMR with her. And that was really intense. And she says, you have to, like, something has to change here. So I went and got Reiki. And so two people in the same week suggested.
That's a sign.
That's a sign. And then I was pregnant the next month.
Wow.
And now our son is 7. Wow. So I received Reiki as a suggestion, not knowing what it was, didn't know what chakras were. And on our way to that appointment, I told my husband, I said, would you and I be enough? What if we didn't have children? What if this didn't work? And he's like, that would be enough. So I made peace. And I remember the stop sign we're at. I remember like the stair. I remember like where we were at. And I was like, oh, so I had peace going into the appointment. Like if this didn't work, I was going to be okay. And that was different than feelings I had for the previous 2 years. And I also, in that Reiki session, like I felt his presence, my dad's presence. She moved my energy. And it was the first time I could breathe since he died. Oh, I was able to take a deep breath. And that was, I had never felt the feeling of blissful or feeling light. I was always told that I was a lot, or I was too much, or I was a lot to handle, or I'm too intense, or I'm too much of something. But after that session, I felt I felt like perfectly fine the way I was. I felt, I would say, aligned, whole, but I felt blissful. Like I was floating. And I was like, what is this? And she's like, oh, yeah, you can do this. And I was like, no, you're like a magical leprechaun. And I could never do anything like this. And I continued to get Reiki during my pregnancy. I got Reiki during my birth and my postpartum. And I eventually got certified when my son was 6 months old. And I started an exclusive postpartum practice shortly after that. And I was still working my corporate job. And then I moved to a chiropractor's office and I started seeing every woman. I've only ever treated one man that was not my husband. And I'm just not destined for that. I serve women. And then I noticed there was a pattern of wombs. Everything went back to the womb. Like women, whether they were not feeling connected to their child, or they were in menopause, or they were doing IVF or IUI. The chiropractor did a lot of prenatal care and a lot of family care. And it just came back to the connection to their soul, connection to their inner child, connection to the inner power and what they were creating in the world. And there was a disconnection of it. Or they didn't feel emotionally safe for whatever reason to be fully themselves. Here in the Midwest, we're taught to be polite. and not to speak up too much, or women are. And that I'm not from here. I'm not from Nebraska. I'm from Miami. So I am not that. And right. I'm like, but why? And they're like, don't, no, shh, don't say that. Don't be rude. There's something about that Nebraskans call Nebraska nice. Everyone's nice here, but doesn't mean that the throat chakras are open.
I remember that driving through, like we drove through to Seattle, moved to Seattle from Maine, and we stopped and we went to a restaurant. I'm just pausing this for a second because the niceness, you just reminded me of this. Walk in this restaurant and the waiter was unnaturally nice to me. Like,
it's why we live
growing
here,
up,
though.
It's like growing up in Connecticut, I'm like suspicious of the nicest, and I felt so badly because he was genuinely nice.
It's an easy place to live. That's why we've stayed so long. We've stayed here. I've lived here 11 years, and it's why I don't go back to Miami. It's because I want my son to feel like you feel a little bit, my nervous system has relaxed here with
that
this, the driving and this, like, yeah. So like whenever we go back to Miami to visit friends, it's instantly, I realize how stressed I am just even in traffic.
I get that because I'm living in rural Oregon right now, and there's no traffic. There's no traffic.
See, it's amazing, right? I can get anywhere in the city with traffic, probably 30 minutes, you know? So,
I know.
But with over time, I noticed that my clients would mirror the work that I was healing. I never stopped healing. So I noticed, you know, women would come in and they were healing abandonment issues, and I'd be working on abandonment issues from my dad, and even though he had passed. So like I would see like these phases, and eventually, right before the pandemic, 1 month before the pandemic, I shut down my chiropractic practice, or my Reiki practice inside the chiropractor office. I didn't want to pay rent anymore. And my little, he was saying, Reiki takes mommy away. I was working a full-time job and I was doing Reiki in the evenings. It was a lot.
Yeah.
So I switched to online, not knowing exactly what I was going to do or how it was going to look like. And eventually I quit corporate a year later in 2021, and I ran a marketing agency and I did Reiki. So, and now I shut down the marketing agency about a month ago, and I was like,
awesome.
And I was like, I can't do this anymore. This is not for me. And I've always done Reiki. So Reiki for me now, I did a lot of reflection, and I served postpartum for a long time in pregnancy primarily. And then I switched to fertility because I did some, when I had to write down my birth story, I had to write down my postpartum story, and I had to write down my fertility story. It all started because I got that one Reiki session.
Yeah.
And then, so I
That's
serve
amazing.
From fertility to postpartum. I do that with my podcast and my membership, which is really important to me because in fertility, everything is thousands of dollars. So there are socioeconomic barriers that a lot of women and races cannot break through because there is a lack of funds.
Right.
So Reiki doesn't replace medical care, but it certainly can help. Some women conceive naturally with watching the videos on TikTok or YouTube or coming to the free circles I hold every month. We have 97 Reiki babies to date. And it's truly my life's work. I have the first Reiki baby, and womb work is essentially shadow work sprinkled with some Reiki and some coaching. So the wounds that we heal inside the womb are like the father wound, which is the most important if you're trying to conceive. How your dad showed up in your life when you were 0 to 7 years old is so important. Was he present? Was he affectionate? Did he neglect you? Did he abandon you? Was he around, but, you know, was he flaky? A lot of that can impact a person's self-worth and how they interpret how they receive love and give love, because those are their examples. Their emotional safety. Are they taught to be invisible? Are they taught to learn that there's less conflict if they're quiet? There's a lot of things that are learned and internalized from how a father shows up in a girl's life. And then the second wound is the mother wound. Those are the first two things I always work with a client. We don't skip, because a lot of the things, the stress, the limiting beliefs, the triggers come from the inherited beliefs that they have from those two roles. So how did mom nurture? How did she receive praise? Was there a constant feeling inadequate? Did they have to compete with siblings for attention? So how also that influences when we are older as women, what kind of partners do we choose? How are we receiving love from those partners? How are we speaking up in our lives? How much space are we taking up in conversations, rooms, jobs? What rooms are we feeling safe enough to enter? Metaphorically, so are we feeling bold enough to apply for our dream job? Are we going to stay at a certain level? All of that comes from emotional safety. And that comes with just not feeling just safe enough, but also feeling worthy enough to feel your emotions and voice them. So the throat chakra and the sacral plexus chakra, which is your womb, are so important. But this work is not just for fertility. So yeah, our goal is to have a baby, but the consequences, the positive consequences that come from healing your worth, healing your emotional safety, where you feel like you can express your emotions, you can take up space, you learn to advocate for yourself. No one's ever going to say, "No, I really wish I didn't do that." Because when that baby does come, are you going to let Jimmy bully Johnny at school? No, hell's in the no. Like, you're going to be like, "Excuse me, sir, principal, you know, so-and-so did this to Johnny and this is not correct." You're going to speak up. You're not going to pray for a child or hope or try to manifest a child and then be like, "Yeah, I'm going to be a doormat over here." No, like that's not the people, at least with the people I work with. No, they're intentional beings. Do they wish their fertility was different and that it was just an oops or easy, or they could get drunk one night? Well, I work with also queer couples and non-binary couples, or people who are single who don't have partners and they have to buy sperm. So some people have to be very intentional how about they're going to go to conceive. So womb work is really important for all of those reasons to end generational trauma, generational patterns, patterns of abuse, all of those things, so that one, you have more capacity to love with, vibrate higher with, and two, really be the version of you you want to parent with. And I feel like the children that are coming in, the souls that are coming in, the thing that I love to connect moms with is the spirit baby. So what are they asking mom to do in order to conceive? Like, what is their blockage in order to transcend faster? Is it possible they can transcend faster? Because I believe any person can change their vibration. They can quantum leap. They can change their shifts. They can change anything that they want in their life. So just because I say, "Hey, spirit baby, I interpreted this message that they're going to be ready in July of next year." And they say the blockage is you need to get better at receiving. That's a big one. Is because fathers are largely absent in some way, or there's a void or a traumatic event there, or their presence is lacking, or they didn't receive love from their fathers. They learn to be hyper independent and they learn to be hyper masculine and alpha. And then they get affirmed for that and validated for that. They get rewarded for that, for being assertive and getting things done. And that's all good. But eventually that also can lead to burnout, you know, nervous system dysregulation, if we don't have a balance of feminine and masculine in our systems. And what I see is that we have to learn to ask for help. We have to learn to build our emotionally safe circle with interested people. We need to learn to advocate for ourselves. And some women even have trouble asking for a glass of water from their partner. And I was like, you know, you can ask, like, you do so much. Yeah. You can ask for them to plan the vacation and promise you the world's not going to fall apart. It's going to be okay. And just giving them that permission, I was like, you can ask for help. You can ask them, your mom, to come into town. I told a woman, I was like, why don't you ask your mom to stay with you while you do the transfer? So you're not alone. Because her husband couldn't rearrange a work trip. She goes, it's not a big deal. I was like, you're getting pregnant today.
Yeah.
I was like, you're getting a transfer of two embryos. You're going to be pregnant today.
Yeah.
There's going to be embryos inside of you. Wow. Technically, you are pregnant. That's not something to do alone.
Right.
You're going to want your mom there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, no, sit with that for a minute. I was like, you're going to go there and you're going to have no one there. I was like, but your mom can go. Go ask her. I'll wait for you on the Zoom call. She paused me. She goes, my mom says she can come.
Oh, awesome.
And I was like, and she goes, I'm so glad you made me do that. It's just like, she goes, I didn't want to be inconvenienced. I was like, I guarantee you, your mom is never going to think you're an inconvenience. The type of relationship that they had, her mom was a lovely human, the way that she described her. And her mom stayed with her even a couple extra days. And I was like, just be with her. Just let her be there for you. So, and she was lucky enough to have like that kind of relationship with her mom. So it just, so the more that we can get better at receiving, because it's the opposite of giving, that can dramatically shift our wounds as well.
Oh yeah. Because that's such a core wound.
Right. Yes. You know,
and then since we've been shifted, you want me to say this? All right. I'm feeling the discomfort because it's a statement that is making me uncomfortable. But since the Equal Rights Amendment and the push of the Rockefellers to get women into the workforce permanently, our ability to hold on to our divine feminine energy has deteriorated because we're now competing with men.
Absolutely.
And
100%.
And so getting back into that state of receiving, which is our innate state, it's a journey because we've had four generations now. So baby boomers, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z, all having ERA. Or that whole equality push. So we don't have mom at home with the kids anymore. We have two parents working full time, which is a paradigm that wobbles the whole infrastructure of the family.
I agree. It's been a lot of deconditioning for years for me to even. Yeah. It took me a long time, even after we were married, to trust my husband to, I trusted my husband. Let me clarify that.
Yeah.
To let fully 100% let go of like tasks. And, I don't want towels folded a certain way. I don't care. I ask you to fix the door or to hang this picture or, and I want it done by this time now. And it was a lot of like communication of back and forth of like, I want it done and I want it done now. So that's control and demanding. And, or later we progress as I'll ask you to do this, but I'm going to give you to this date. And if you don't do it, I'm going to hire someone. And then, but there was, so even though I asked for something, I also had to learn to advocate the meaning behind the ask and a meaningful way where, as a deeply committed partner of mine, he could then see, respect, and know. So then he could take action that would honor my request. And I was lacking that for many years. So I was like, can you please hang this picture? It would mean a lot to me. you know, I think it's going to create this space and it would be really beautiful. And it reminds me XYZ, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then it got done so much quicker
mm-hmm.
because there was a genuine ask and I detached from the outcome of when he was going to do it and he gets stuff done. I don't have a long honey to-do list.
Right.
So the energy behind it shifted. So then it was easier for him to give.
Mm-hmm.
It was easier for me to receive and trust.
Yeah.
With that. And I think that that's just like a next layer of mm-hmm. like, how do you know that he's going to get it done or he's going to get it done the right way? Well, I actually had a therapist shortly after Ollie was born. I was like, he doesn't change the diaper the right way. And she said, whoa, slow your roll. And I just remember this being a core memory of mine of like, meaning like he gets to be his own parent and he gets to change the diaper his way. I mean, like, does it get done? Like he gets to have his own space. Like you're not his keeper, you know? And that moment was very freeing for me. I was like, oh, okay. Like these are not my soldiers. These are all individuals living together, including this baby.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to be his own person. And I think that was like a huge like shift for me in my, mm-hmm. my soul, but also in my postpartum and me just living inside my marriage. He is a separate person. Not mm-hmm. my soldier. And I'm not.
That's
hit.
Huge. That's it huge.
A huge shift for me in that one therapy session.
Yeah.
And I love a good therapist. But so for me, it's just you have to have it. It's you may ask for something with your partner, but it might take work. And I always can say like with energy work. And as you're embodying it and integrating it into your life and applying it, it's like soccer or any sport. The first time a kid kicked a ball, he didn't know the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You may be a little clunky at it, but keep at it. It takes practice.
Yeah.
And I think that people don't have that literal logical perspective when we're implementing mm-hmm. like new emotional work or identity work.
Mm-hmm.
We're working through shadow work,
right?
And we're shifting to be this better person or mm-hmm. to implement things. I think that people lose sight of that. Like, you're new to this. It's okay to not be great at it.
Right.
You know? So my kid just started soccer. He's had 2 soccer practices. We'll see how the first game goes. He doesn't even know what position he plays. It's going to be okay.
Right. Right. And that's such a gift, is like that grace of allowing us to take, you know, have the training wheels.
Yeah.
We don't need to be an expert in everything in a short period of time. We can gift ourselves the opportunity to bring more awareness in as we get the awareness. We don't have to know everything all at once.
Oh, amen. I didn't know how to be a wife when we got married. I was a terrible wife. Not completely. I cooked, cleaned, and took care of the bills, and I was the breadwinner, and he never had to do anything with my 2 horses. So like, I thought I was like doing all the Latino wife things, but guess what? It led to me being burnt out, angry, and resentful.
Mm-hmm.
And him, and then like probably 5 years into our marriage, it shifts. I do the bills, but he does all the housework, and I do all the cooking, but he does all the errands and all the shopping. So like, things can shift. It just takes mm-hmm. practice, and you might just have to be, I had to learn to be radically honest with myself. And I think since healing and conquering some huge wounds, that gave me the confidence to do that. I was mm-hmm. too scared before.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And having that space of, I just had it. So I read this book 3 times. It's Alison Armstrong's The Queen's Code, and it's the interrelativity mm-hmm. of how men and women think. And it transformed how I interrelate with both men and women, because we, among the many things this talks about, is we can handle multiple things at the same time. It's the way our brains work. So like, you're paying attention to the dogs while you're having a conversation with me, yet you're present. Like, I'm right. feeling presence. With men, what I've learned is if I just shut up and let them talk, I don't have to repeat myself.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. So I say X, Y, Z, double A, whatever, pause, allow the male to hear it, and then let them respond, because they can think of one thing, and it's not, no denigration, I love men. They have the capacity to do one thing at a time.
So I have the ability to short circuit my husband really fast.
Right, because we bombard them with the way we think. And they do one, we do 20.
It's true. 100% true.
And so like, to allow him to be like, and if we repeat ourselves, that's when the short circuits. Because they've heard the first way. And then if you say it a second way, it's like, but which one am I supposed to listen to?
I even see that in my little.
Yeah.
So are you into human design?
Yes. And I'm a manifestor generator.
I'm a projector.
Ah.
My husband's a manifesting generator. My son is a projector too. And we are like almost the same. It's really fierce. Our charts are very similar. He looks like my husband, but is a carbon copy of my personality in so many ways, but just way more confident. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very confident person, but this kid is dynamite. He just is so funny with him, I have to be very like mindful of how I speak to him, as one, he's a male, and two is, how did my younger version like to be spoken to? I noticed there's so much more kickback or argument or mouthiness for Quest, or just like these long, intense conversations of I have to give an explanation as to why we are community in our house and why we do chores together and why you don't get paid for chores. And this is not a negotiation. So like, how I have to like remind him to do things, like even if we have a chore chart or a hygiene chart or a checklist. But yes, that is something we're actively working on in our communication in our house, because he keeps up leveling things for me. He's 7. I'm 40.
Oh, you're so much trouble.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating place. And then another place is, and that this was another thing I practiced with somebody that was a friend of mine for a while. I decided one day, I'm like, what happens if I just show up and just accept him where he's at? Don't try to change him. Don't try to like impose my will on him, because like, I grew up in a codependent relationship. And so that's what I modeled after. And it's like, what would it be like if I just accepted somebody where they're at? And I was amazed at how quickly we opened up to each other for a while.
I think that's really easy for me to do with clients, but not so much with family. I'll have to look into reasons why. I think there's just a lot more baggage with family. Yeah. But I was able to do that with my dad right before he died.
Oh, cool.
And with my mom, I accepted her as a person. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes in complicated relationships, you might have to do that a few times. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to, like, it may not be just a one-time thing. Like, with my mom, she's still alive. So I have to, she also switches the script on me. My son and my mom are my
teachers.
My two teachers and are my most intense relationships. My husband's the easiest thing ever. But with them, they keep changing the script on me. So it's like, I have to constantly like check in with myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you fully accept someone and you can meet them where they're at, that's a true gift.
It is.
Because you're not accepting responsibility for them, but you're just like, this is your soul. This is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness.
Well, not just the soul, but like recognizing their humanity as well, which is where we get all the triggers from.
It's true. It's true.
And this particular soul.
Did you find it to be de-triggering for you?
I learned how to master triggers from it. It didn't.
Ooh, tell me about that.
Oh, I do somatic work too. And so he would like just walk up and go, eh. And I didn't know that he was pressing something. And I would just break out in tears. And I'd thank him while I was crying because I had the awareness to know that he had no idea at all that he just pressed a button. Couldn't. He didn't know me well enough.
Wow.
So I was like, and I'd like feel in my body where I was feeling it. I'd be like, oh, this hurts in my belly or whatever it was. And I just like start just being present to the little girl within me that had some story around the button that just got pressed. And I would just, and he'd be staring at me awkwardly while I'm crying and thanking him. Like, I have to be present to this because it came up, but I'm so grateful that you did this for me. And he's like, I feel so uncomfortable right now. I'm like, I'm sorry, you can walk away. You can totally walk away. I'm just going to be present with myself until I'm done feeling it. Because
yeah, you're feeling it the whole wavelength.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just like something.
So then
that
you can decide
through.
You're ready to release it or hold on to it.
Yep. I like to release it.
Oh, I like to release it. But I learned that I did a certification in Reiki for sacred Reiki for childbirth. And that was one
oh,
of the
cool.
techniques is that in when we're clearing like past trauma from or past birth trauma, particularly is, are you ready to release it or do you need more time? Mm. And if they're not ready to release it, we pause. And sometimes they weren't.
Oh, wow.
And then we wait, either we do more Reiki work on that spot or we do more breath work and Reiki on that spot, or we gently close the session until they're ready to move forward and we stop the story or the processing of that trauma story to do a full clear until they are ready.
Because
sometimes some people still identify with stories and they're not ready yet.
I want to release all of them.
Me too. I think that's a natural healer's or into it, like especially like a practitioner like yourself. That's a very like, because you're in it. You're like,
I know
how to heal. But for people who are wanting to feel better, just wanting to come in that are not in the healing profession or in the healing industry.
It can be a little more rough.
It's layered for them. And sometimes people are not ready. I worked with women who get to a certain point in their birth and they're just not ready yet. And one time it took me like a year and a half to clear one woman's birth.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. With multiple sessions. She would come and then she would take a break for 3 months and she would come 2 weeks again or back to back week. And then she would take a break. Just depends on the person and like what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it can get pretty persnickety.
That's for true.
Yeah. Cause I've had the opportunity to, I came into this life with a dislocated hip.
Oh no.
So 6 weeks in, I'm in traction, which clearly was my soul saying, you get to deal with trauma right off because you got to heal this one. This is big. So after 6 months of that, I was in a body cast for a year and a half. And that's where I developed my bond with my dad because my mom couldn't pick me up. And so I got out and I've done so much healing on this, so much healing. I had a twin in vitro and like so many layers. But like the point is that, yeah, I could be in that victim mentality of like, I was traumatized. And yes, I was genuinely traumatized. Was, no doubt. Do I want to be that person anymore? Nope, I don't. So what's my option here? I get to go through it. I have to be present with all of the feelings, all of the traumas, not from a place of feeling the victimhood, but just where it is in my body to release it. And so the first time I really fully did that, my body was so happy. I had aches all over the place.
Wow.
I had to be present with myself for like 3 hours of just like intermittent crying and blowing my nose and calming.
That's tough.
Yeah, it was, but I don't have it anymore.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So I don't like doing it.
But it clears it.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather clear it than have it color my perception of the world.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. Color my perception of the world. I love that.
You can use it.
Okay, I will borrow it. I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, all we are is remembering who we are. And
that one too.
You can totally do that too. And we're just uncovering the layers of illusion that we signed up for before we came into our bodies. Like, I knew I was going to clear all of the family trauma, all of it. Like, I remember as a little one, I'm like, I'm not having kids. I'm not bringing this forward. I am the end of the line. Who thinks like that as a little one? I was like 8 or 9 when I thought that.
I used to think I would do things differently when I became a mom. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew exactly what she was doing was wrong. Mm-hmm. As far as back as I can remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Like, yeah, I can remember, like, I remember sitting at, I remember, like, almost, like, the day that she like, stopped. She was a really good parent. And then I remember, like, the day that she stopped being a good parent.
Oh,
because
wow.
Her boyfriend moved out of our house. And I said, when I have babies, I said, I'm going to keep my partner in the house. I'll make sure he doesn't leave. And I said, you make people leave.
Oh,
yeah, I remember that. And she doesn't. I do. I was in kindergarten. I remember. I got off the bus. I came in. He was moving his stuff. And I came in. She was sitting on the couch crying. So, yeah, I remember that day.
Poked really hard. Here, Mom, here's a trigger for you. You're down already. Let me get you down more.
I am sure that I am the only child that still speaks to her. The other two don't. And I set really... I'm her parent a lot in our relationship. And I set very firm boundaries. Like, this is something that doesn't make me feel safe with you. And this is what we can talk about. These are the topics I feel safe talking to you about, and X, Y, Z. And sometimes she doesn't like being told that. So then she'll feel like she's scolded. But I also say, if you want to talk about your emotions, I'm going to expect that you're going to share them with me, and I will talk to you in a mature, kind way, and I will listen to you. So we're working on building her up so that she still hasn't called back. But so if we set like a firm boundary, she sulks for a while. But if that's how she's processing and where she's at, she's allowed to do that. I'll send a text. Yeah. Hey, checking in, making sure you're okay. But that's okay. Like, it's okay for her for everything not to be peachy keen.
Right.
Especially if there's a complicated relationship. The fact that we're respectful, we're in each other's lives. She has access to my son in a way that is agreeable and mutually respected. Win. That is a win. Mm-hmm. And the way she is with my son is nothing like the way she was with us.
Right.
I think that's a gift. Mm-hmm. So to be where we are today, where we were like when I was a teenager, night and day.
Yeah.
But that also goes to like being committed to breaking behaviors and generational trauma.
Oh yeah. Sure. And that is such a major, I think I'm going to lump you into my generation for a minute.
Go ahead. I'm 40. I'll turn your generation.
Okay.
It'll be an honor.
Thank you. We came here to end the generational trauma.
I believe so.
And, you know, the ones before us open the space for us to be able to heal the generational trauma. Like the light workers that came the first wave, first and second waves that came, they were like, okay, we just got to break the field up so these ones coming after can do the work.
I believe that to my core. Like when I like sit back and I think about all of the things that I have been able to gain, emotional intelligence, emotional regulation, emotional safety, a happy marriage, things that she wasn't able to, and things mm-hmm. that she did successfully in her life. I believe she was just a warrior. She was like, not just a warrior. She was a strong warrior and she was a survivor. Mm-hmm. And she's not interested in healing. She's not mm-hmm. interested in letting go. She's happy to stay where she is. And she has been in the same place for a really long time energetically. I feel that my mom's life purpose in this lifetime was to survive and bring me forth because I wasn't supposed to be here. And I feel things and has always felt things, and the other two are just emotionally not available at all. So I feel like a really easy way for me to see light workers who are maybe not necessarily fully awakened yet or just at the tippy toe of their awakening is tell me about your siblings. Tell me how you feel things. And like, oh no, like I'm the black sheep of the family. Like usually that's a key word. So the person that's the feeler of the family is, I have like flipped the script for them a lot. Do you know you're the strongest because you feel it? And because you feel it, you have the ability to end it.
Mm-hmm.
You have the awareness because what you feel, probably the other 2, 3, 4, whatever siblings they have, or their parents may be oblivious
right
to the behavior and will probably lack accountability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you do have an opportunity here. And they're like, yeah. Whoa. And I'm like, let me explain why.
Yeah.
And I give them an example of me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is why, this is an example.
Yeah.
And this is how it's played out. But mm-hmm. this is how powerful you are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I see in women is that usually if they're wanting their fertility, in their infertility journey is an awakening.
Mm.
So a lot of like things that happen to women in their infertility journey is a spiritual opportunity to connect with what they're trying to do. But there is a lot of medical mindedness still and not able to tap into the emotion, the signs, the messages, the inner voice still.
Mm-hmm.
But with the women who I work with, leaps and bounds, they're just moving mountains and their families, even changing their husband's wombs. Like sometimes I will get a message from spirit being like, hey, I need you to lead your husband in this kind of conversation. You've done so much work with your father and mother wound, but where is your husband or your partner at with his mom?
Mm-hmm.
Because father wounds for women, mother wounds for dads, mm-hmm. or for the dad to be. So, and then that's a whole conversation. I was like, because if they've tried and we're like, okay, and then spirit baby will give me like a picture of the dad's womb, energetic womb. Like how can we move him to not be triggered by his mom? Was he overly criticized? Is she passed? Does he have an abandonment wound? Does he have like, it's never good enough?
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of things, very similar to the dad wound, but more about like being, either controlling or being over-criticized. That's with, I see with men with fertility because male infertility accounts for 40% of infertility in the United States.
Wow. Oof.
So they usually instantly think that it's just the woman. 40%.
Well, and that makes sense because of like how the dynamics of the masculine have been distorted in our culture for the past few generations.
Yeah. So, and male infertility is the easiest to fix.
Right.
Because it's less invasive and it can be changed with like what influences male infertility is like synthetics, perfumes, colognes, soaps, laundry detergent, the heat around the testicles, things like that.
Oh, this is going to be bad. Beer.
Sorry.
Beer.
Oh, beer and has smoking estrogen. Too.
Beer has
and
estrogen.
And smoking. those are the biggest contributors to, and you can, I had so many like different experts on my podcast. You can change it in about 75 to 80 days.
Wow.
So like if they change diet or like, or smoking, or like smoking and drinking is the biggest influence on the sperm, like low motility. So, but the Chinese practitioner I spoke to, she's like, yeah, like 75 to 85 days is the window.
That's awesome.
So like, that's like less than 3 months.
Yeah.
And you can really change your sperm and your fertility.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, not to mention if you were to add in your energetics work, how powerful would the swimmers be?
Pretty damn. Oh, wow. This has been a fabulous conversation, my dear. I'm so grateful.
I'm so grateful that you allowed me to share space with you.
Oh, yeah. Happily. Happily. And I'm going to ask you one final question because I have another podcast coming up, and that is, how do people find you?
You can find me on all main social platforms with my handle, The Carolina Sotomayor. And you can connect with me on my website, carolinasotomayor.com.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for the work you do in the world, my dear.
Thank you so much for having me.
So grateful. Mm.
Can you help me redefine truth and preservation of our soul shine? I can feel it, yours and mine. Close your eyes and witness it inside. In your bones, you will know. Trust and let go. Let it flow.